the harm caused by a lawyer convicted of a crime is no less if it's committed by an inactive lawyer as opposed to an active lawyer.
Senator Ted Stevens fights to keep his Alaska law license. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 16th of December. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the proposed state budget includes a pay raise for Governor Palin.
There are approximately 175 state employees that make more than the governor.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Grant Station, finding grants for nonprofit organizations, schools, and governmental agencies throughout the U.S. and Canada. Grant Station, fast track to funding. On the web at grantstation.com.
Federal prosecutors say former state Senator Jerry Ward convinced a witness in Senator Ted Stevens' trial to lie after the trial about an immunity deal. They say Ward was trying to protect himself from prosecution for an unrelated matter. Last month, former VCO employee David Anderson sent the court a letter saying he lied during the Stevens trial about having an immunity deal with the government. Anderson said in the letter that he actually does have immunity for himself and for 13 family members. But government prosecutors say that's not true. Now, in a motion filed yesterday, they make a case against Jerry Ward and say he was the one who convinced Anderson to lie after the trial was over. Prosecutors say Ward falsified documents for Anderson, claiming that he had immunity. The government never signed the documents, and they're not on government letterhead. In them, Anderson says he was promised immunity for himself and other family members, including his girlfriend and his girlfriend's father, Jerry Ward. The government says Ward and his daughter, Kristen Deacon, were actually the ones who sent the letter to the court last month. They have surveillance video of Ward and Deacon sending it to the court and defense counsel from an Anchorage Kinko's. Ward is currently being investigated for his connection to Bill Weimer, a prison advocate and founder of Allvest Incorporated. Weimer pleaded guilty in August to giving Ward money in exchange for his support for building a prison. Stevens' lawyers have called for a hearing about Anderson's claim that he lied during the trial. They say it might point to prosecutorial misconduct and could lead to a new trial for Stevens or even dismissal of the charges. However, prosecutors say holding a hearing to interview Anderson is not necessary since they believe he's now scheming with Ward to deceive the court. Anderson testified in Stevens' trial this fall that he helped build Stevens' house as an employee of the VCO Corporation. Stevens was convicted of taking gifts, including his house renovations, from VCO and its CEO. The Alaska Bar Association says Senator Ted Stevens should have his law license temporarily suspended. Stevens is fighting the move, which is standard when a lawyer is convicted of a felony. The Bar Association filed its reply yesterday saying it is appropriate for the court to temporarily suspend his license. Stevens' lawyers argued in a motion filed earlier this month that because the senator doesn't plan on practicing law in Alaska and is on inactive status in the state, there's no need to suspend him. But counsel for the Alaska Bar Association, Steve Van Gore, says that's not how the rules work. He says the point is not to punish, but keep the public informed and safe.
I can certainly appreciate from any convicted lawyer's point of view that providing publicity of the conviction subjects the lawyer to public scrutiny, if not, criticism for having been convicted of a criminal offense. But to describe it as a public reprimand is inaccurate.
Stevens lawyer Tim McKeever in Anchorage did not return calls, but in his motion filed with the court earlier this month, he called the decision to suspend Stevens' license premature, since the legal process has not yet wrapped up. Stevens plans to appeal his case. The state Supreme Court will weigh the arguments before deciding whether to temporarily suspend Stevens' license. The suspension would last until the case has run its course, at which point the Bar Association would recommend a final action, which could include reprimand or disbarment. Senator Stevens has already temporarily lost his law license in Washington, D.C. and California. District of Columbia Court of Appeals Clerk Garland Pinkston Jr. says Stevens' temporary suspension in Washington was automatic as soon as the paperwork went through.
Our rules provide that any member of our bar who is convicted of a serious crime will be automatically suspended on an interim basis as soon as the system is aware of that conviction and obtains the formal documents evidencing the conviction. It is standard operating procedure.
Pinkston says a three-judge panel on the D.C. Court of Appeals will decide later whether Stevens should permanently lose his license to practice law in Washington, D.C. Environmental groups are challenging an Environmental Protection Agency permit that allows oil and gas companies to dump wastewater in Cook Inlet. KBBI's Casey Kelly has more.
Trustees for Alaska, a nonprofit public interest law firm, filed a brief with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals this week. Trustees is representing two native villages, two commercial fishing groups, and the water conservation organization Cook Inlet Keeper. Bob Shavelson, Cook Inlet Keeper's executive director, says the EPA is allowing oil and gas companies such as Chevron to pollute Cook Inlet waters to a much greater degree than they would allow in the rest of the United States.
Chevron is the leading dumper in Cook Inlet. They've had record profits over the past year from oil and gas development, and we just think they should do the right thing and reinject their wastes and protect Cook Inlet like they do the rest of the country's waters.
Shavelson says the problem is that when the companies pump oil and gas to the surface at one of their offshore platforms in the inlet, it's separated from seawater, leaving a toxic mixture of oil grease, heavy metals, and other pollutants. He says on the North Slope and elsewhere in the country, the EPA requires this mixture to be reinjected back into the reservoir so that no pollution occurs. But in Cook Inlet, the companies are allowed to use mixing zones where the toxic sludge is dumped directly into coastal waters.
One of the notions that's been put forward is that it's like a giant flushing toilet, and it doesn't matter what you dump into it, it'll assimilate in the mixing waters of Cook Inlet. But what we know from looking at computer models and actual conditions is that they don't mix thoroughly, and fish swim through areas that have been designated sacrifice zones by EPA for the high levels of toxic pollution in them.
The EPA issues these permits every 5 years. Shavelson says the agency didn't follow the guidelines of the Federal Clean Water Act in issuing this one because it increased the size and number of the mixing zones. The court challenge filed by trustees for Alaska also alleges that the EPA cooked the books to justify the reissuing of the permit.
The Environmental Protection Agency went out of its way to increase the pollution at the request of the oil industry. So we looked at data that showed that they really didn't rely on science and fact in developing this, and they really just made up these numbers.
Han Shaw is a project coordinator with the EPA in Seattle who worked on the 2007 permit reissue. She hadn't seen and wouldn't comment on the Trustees for Alaska lawsuit, but says the agency did its due diligence.
Our EPA reviewed the previous permit. We also reviewed our regulations, which specifies the type of waste and the limits in which those wastes can be discharged. So we looked into those types of considerations.
Shaw disputes the idea that any numbers were fabricated or ignored during the permitting process. Instead, she says the agency used the best available data.
Yes, we looked into studies that had been performed in the inlet and evaluate those studies to ensure that we're not going to cause harm.
The EPA has yet to file a response to Trustees for Alaska's brief. A spokesman for Trustees says the briefing period will conclude on April 1, 2009, and then oral arguments will be scheduled. Besides Cook Inlet Keeper, the suit was filed on behalf of the native villages of Nanwalek and Port Graham, as well as the Cook Inlet Fishermen's Fund and the United Cook Inlet Drift Association. In Homer, I'm Casey Kelly.
Governor Sarah Palin's proposed budget for the next fiscal year calls for a 7% reduction in state spending. Even as the governor is calling for government to tighten its belt, a commission that Palin appointed is recommending she get a $25,000 raise. The governor's current salary is $125,000 per year. The State Officers' Compensation Commission is also recommending slightly smaller raises for the lieutenant governor and members of Palin's cabinet. Gordon Harrison of Juneau is one of five members on the all-volunteer commission. The former head of the Legislative Research Agency says 26 U.S. governors earn bigger salaries than Sarah Palin. So do many of her own employees.
There are approximately 175 state employees right now who are in regular service that make more than the governor.
The commission also recommends boosting legislators' salaries to $50,000 per year and eliminating the per diem payments they get when the legislature is not in session. The move would equalize all lawmakers' pay. Because legislators claim widely varying amounts of per diem, income last year ranged from Fairbanks Senator Gary Wilkins' low of $24,000 to a high of more than $46,000 for Representative Mary Nelson of Bethel. Public hearings on the recommendations will be held Thursday morning in Anchorage. The Compensation Commission's recommendations become law unless the legislature actively overturns them. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, environmental groups react to President-elect Obama's energy team.
That just shows how important climate change and global warming is to this nation.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by
Tech Cominco and the Red Dog Mine, encouraging listeners to tune into AK every weekend. Check your local public radio station for airtimes.
The Aleutian Islands village of Nikolsky has not had phone service since early November. ACS provides service to the island. ACS Communications Director Paula Dobbin says the problem started with a blown switch.
The village had some power issues, and it was related to fuel supply. And as fuel dwindled, the generator had power surges. It experienced spikes, and that contributed to our switch partially burning up. Some electronic components in it actually got fried. And we had to go to the manufacturer and get them to build us new parts.
Dobbin says that Nikolsky has a specialized phone system that's tailored for a small, isolated community. Only about 40 towns use the same type of switch, so the part had to be specially made by Nortel in Canada, then shipped to Anchorage. A technician is trying to get to Nikolsky to repair the problem, but is stuck in Unalaska because of weather delays. The town has relied on a satellite phone and satellite internet connections to communicate with people off the island. The Aleutian Region School District, which runs the Nikolsky School, has filed a complaint against ACS with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. President-elect Barack Obama says his new energy and environment team will work together to develop green energy and tackle global warming. APRN's Libby Casey reports from Washington.
President-elect Obama has picked Dr. Stephen Chu, director of the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, as his energy secretary. Chu is a Nobel Prize winner in physics and has made a mission of working on alternative energy research. Former Clinton-era head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Carol Browner, will be in a new White House job as a type of energy and climate czar. The new chair of the White House Council on Environmental Quality will be Nancy Sutley, who comes from a job as deputy mayor of Los Angeles for energy and environment and worked under Browner at the EPA. The former head of New Jersey's Department of Environmental Protection, Lisa Jackson, is Obama's pick to run the EPA. The only nominee experienced in dealing with Alaska is Browner. She clashed with Alaska's Republican delegation during the Clinton years over environmental issues. The only member from that time who will still be in office next year, Congressman Don Young, said he wouldn't comment on the selections this week because he's in Alaska with family. Environmentalists are pleased with the Browner pick. Alaska Wilderness League Executive Director Cindy Shogun says it's encouraging to see Obama take an organized approach to tackling global warming.
We're very pleased. I mean, he's obviously put a lot of thought into these nominees and the idea of having a cohesive and comprehensive energy policy and how that connects to climate change. So I think it was very exciting and forward-thinking. And I'm especially excited about Carol Browner getting this new position because I think that just shows how important climate change and global warming is to this nation.
Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski says the team Obama has assembled shows he's serious about reducing emissions and developing new technologies. She'll likely work with energy nominee Stephen Chu, since she's slated to be the ranking Republican on the Senate Energy Committee next year. Murkowski says she hasn't met him yet, but expects to speak with him soon. She says he seems very focused on developing green technology.
It's the
science is going to allow us to build this energy of the future. So it looks to me like he's put an individual in there that has that background, those credentials that can get us there.
The director of Governor Sarah Palin's Washington office, John Katz, says the Department of Energy has less to do with oil and gas development than the name might imply. It's not involved in the debate over offshore oil drilling or developing the Arctic.
However, the Department of Energy will be very much involved with the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline loan guarantee. They are vested with a statutory responsibility for reviewing the loan guarantee and ultimately making decisions.
Katz says the department is also involved in nuclear power and funding alternative energy projects. He remembers the nominated energy and climate czar Carol Browner from her years at the EPA under Clinton, but he says the rest of the appointments are relative unknowns in Alaska. He says the EPA pick Lisa Jackson could especially influence the state.
The Environmental Protection Agency has a tremendous impact on Alaska. They administer a portion of the Wetlands Management Program. They're involved in implementation of the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. They provide money for village safe drinking water.
President-elect Obama is expected to announce his pick for Interior Secretary later this week. NPR is reporting that he's planning to tap Colorado Senator Ken Salazar. That's being met with mixed responses. Salazar is against drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, but some environmentalists are coming out against him, saying his conservation record is not strong enough to run the Interior Department, which includes the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Bureau of Land Management, the National Park Service, and the Minerals Management Service. The director of the Center for Biological Diversity, Kieran Suckling, says Salazar would be a disappointment.
The areas where Salazar's record is the most problematic is on global warming and on endangered species. So, for example, on global warming, he successfully fought efforts to make the Army Corps of Engineers take global warming into account when doing federal water projects. He has fought higher fuel efficiency standards.
Suckling says Salazar also fought listings under the Endangered Species Act that conservationists supported. Obama has not officially named him as Interior nominee, so Suckling is hoping the plans may change. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The Arctic has been called the canary in the coal mine when it comes to global warming, and a new study quantifies just how pronounced that phenomenon is. Scientists call it Arctic amplification. This fall, the ocean north of Alaska was about 10 degrees warmer than normal. As the sea ice melts, the water absorbs more heat and then releases that heat into the atmosphere in the fall. Julian Struva is presenting the research at the American Geophysical Union conference this week. She says climate models are behind the curve in predicting how quickly the sea ice is melting.
So because of that, then the impacts of that sea ice loss on the climate system, such as this amplified warming that we're seeing in the autumn season, then they would also be behind the curve in predicting, you know, how soon that is happening as well. But the reality is that at least the models and the observations are consistent in the idea that when you do lose that ice, you're going to get this amplified warming that happens in the autumn that will eventually also extend into the winter season as well.
And how might this rapid warming in the Arctic impact global climate change as a whole, sort of generally?
Well, you know, certainly whatever happens in the Arctic is going to affect the rest of the planet. And besides just affecting changes in the environment in the Arctic, such as warming of the land temperatures and perhaps accelerating permafrost thawing, certainly changing the energy balance of the Arctic also affects all of our atmospheric circulation and precipitation patterns around the world. So, you know, the sea ice helps to keep the planet cool, and that temperature gradient between the Arctic, for example, and the equator drives a lot of our atmospheric circulation and our storm tracks and our precipitation. And as we change that and you warm the Arctic more, eventually the rest of the system is going to have to respond. But I would say that the research right now is still pretty much in its infancy. We don't really know the full impacts of what's happening in the Arctic and how it's going to impact climate in the lower latitudes, for example.
Well, understanding that weather is certainly different from overall climate, it still seems worth noting that Alaska had an unusually cool summer in 2008. How does this square with what must have been an unusually warm summer over the Beaufort Sea?
Well, it's interesting in that, you know, we did have actually overall cooler temperatures than say we had in 2007. And yet you still had this dramatic ice loss in 2008 that was almost as extreme as what we saw in 2007. And what this really points to, I think, is a change sort of in the sea ice state in that we've gotten to the point where the ice has gotten really thin so that regardless of what happens in the summer in terms of temperature or atmospheric circulation, we're still losing a lot of that ice because the ice is really thin and it's just not able to survive the summer melt season anymore.
And what other global warming research is being highlighted at the conference this week? What are some of the other things that are coming out, the other findings?
One of the interesting findings certainly is that, you know, so we have this Arctic amplification that happens during autumn as we lose the sea ice. But one of the studies, she also shows that warming can then spread out over the adjacent land areas by atmospheric circulation and perhaps go inland about 1,500 kilometers. And when you have these periods of rapid ice loss, the models show that all of a sudden you're going to warm these land temperatures three times faster than if you didn't have these periods of rapid ice loss, and that this then will impact on the permafrost, which I think is a very important study in that permafrost contains, say, about 950 gigatons of carbon, and our atmosphere has about 730 right now. So there's a big looming feedback that is a big, you know, problem if all of a sudden that permafrost starts to release all that carbon back to the atmosphere.
Julian Struva is a scientist at the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Colorado.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Support for APRN coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood comes from the Alaska Sea Life Center, Alaska's unique marine research facility and public aquarium.
Three rural Democrats have joined the House Republican majority, Reggie Jewell of Kotzebue, Bryce Edgman of Dillingham, and Bob Huron of Bethel, are working with the majority. Republican Mike Chenault of Nikiski says the three will broaden the views of the majority caucus. Minority Leader Beth Kurtula of Juneau says she's disappointed with the departures.
It was a tough day yesterday. When you've worked with people for a long time, it's not just, you know, working with a representative from another district. We've worked together for a long time, and it's difficult when people decide to change organizations. But we've always worked across the aisle, and we'll continue doing that. So it's hard when you see it happen, but we're going to meet next week and have our organization finalized so that when we get back for the beginning of session, we'll be ready to go.
The House majority now numbers 26, with the minority numbering 14. A larger student enrollment than predicted is prompting the Anchorage School District to spend more than $600,000 expanding its teaching and classroom aid staff. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
The hiring authorization came before the Anchorage School Board at Monday night's final regular meeting before the holiday break. School Superintendent Carol Como sought rapid approval.
I urge you to support this so that tomorrow we can begin to hire staff to support these students. We've got a lot of needs with our students, and we need to give them the support that's described in this memo.
Como received her wish. The board unanimously approved the nearly $620,000 funding request. The elementary schools, which have enrolled about 500 students over preterm estimates, will fill 8 full-time teacher and 10 teaching assistant positions. The high school and gifted programs will each receive 1 additional teacher position. This semester's English Language Learners program has more than 300 students than last year and requires 3 additional full-time teacher positions. The district will also hire approximately 9 full-time tutor equivalents for the Indian Education Program. Como told the board the recommendations came after the administration examined its ever-increasing and specific data on student performance. This year, those hires are only for the second semester. But if the student and staff needs continue as they now exist, then those positions and the doubled cost will appear in the next budget for the full academic year. Board Member John Steiner wasn't troubled by those new costs.
We have long talked about data-driven budgeting, and when we put money into where the data says we have needs, that's what we should be doing, and I support that greatly.
The new hires will not take the district above the budget limit imposed by the Anchorage Assembly. Como says the funding comes from the increased amount of per-student support from the state, plus a lower-than-predicted average salary for the district teachers. The biggest unexpected student increase involves rural students moving to Anchorage. The district's Indian Education Supervisor, Doreen Brown, offered the latest unofficial tally.
At the beginning of the school year, there was about 500, and to date, we don't know if all of these are native, but they are coming from rural areas, about 740.
Como says this rural influx has spread throughout much of the district and created a tutorial need that can no longer be met by the federal funding provided under the district's Indian Education Program.
We're looking at 20 additional schools getting Indian Education tutor staff, which is going to help those kids. And so that's been the big challenge, and we just finally decided we needed to support it rather than just depend on federal funding, because that just keeps going down, and we just see the needs are too extraordinary. And with the fact that we're past the count period, there's no way we can get additional state funding because the kids were someplace else in many cases when the count period was going on.
The single high school teaching position goes to a new project to develop an education program for non-incarcerated students who have been suspended or expelled for violent offenses. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
The Fairbanks City Council voted last night to give $10,000 to the Yukon Quest. Quest officials sought financial support directly from the council after missing an application deadline for city bed tax funds this fall. A city review committee rejected a late application from the Quest. Councilman Jerry Cleworth offered a compromise that uses other bed tax money to support the sled dog race.
We did not feel it was appropriate to try and overrule the committee and make them take that application back. So I left the council with looking at the other parts of the hotel motel tax distribution to see if there was something there that could be accommodating.
The funding is half the race's normal $20,000 allocation. Quest director Tanya Simpson is grateful for the support, but says race organizers will have to hustle to make up for the missing funds. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Comer, John Ryan and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Ann Hillman in Unalaska, Len Anderson in Anchorage, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Dave Waldron and Gooseberry Peter. John Prophet is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, helping customers get to the next stage through banking, loans, and retirement planning. Wells Fargo, the next stage. The Alaska Giving Coalition announces Pick, Click, Give, a whole new way to reach out and help Alaskans when you apply for your PFD online. Share part of your dividend with some of your favorite Alaska nonprofits. It's a chance for all of us to come together and give a little extra. Remember, when you apply for your PFD online, just Pick, Click, Give. Information online at pickclickgive.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Giving Coalition. Miss our newscast today? Listen to APRN's Alaska Morning News, Economic Report, and News Nightly on the web at APRN.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.